Getting experience and exposure to various practice areas as a student and as a new grad is so, so, so important. Today, I'm going to discuss just why I think it's so pivotal, how I went about it, and also why mentorship is one of those things that I talk about all the time. I'll be sharing my takeaways from episode 79 with Amira Johnson, where we chatted all about working in early intervention as a new grad. While that episode solely focuses on early intervention, there are so many things that we discuss that can be applied across different practice areas. To listen to that episode, head on over to otforlife.com/79. That's O-T, the number 4, LYFE.com/79. If you're interested in occupational therapy, this is the place for you. This show aims to explore our profession by sharing who we are and what we do. Because for us, occupational therapy is more than just a job. Hi, I'm Sarah. Welcome to OT for Life. So for those of you who know me or have been listening to my show for a while, you know that I can talk about early intervention all day, every day. It is my passion. It's my practice area. It is one of my favorite topics to talk about in occupational therapy. You can even say early intervention is my jam. Before I jump in to my takeaways from episode 79, I wanted to make mention that I recently did an IG Live, which has now been turned into an IGTV, with Amira. And in that, we talk even more about early intervention, and we also dive into what working in early intervention during COVID has looked like and how that transition to teletherapy went. She shares some of her go-to treatment activities, and we also answered some of the questions from the audience. So if you're curious to hear even more about teletherapy, early intervention, and all that good stuff, you can find the IGTV video on my Instagram profile grid. So just head on over to ot.4.lyfe on Instagram to check that out. So my first takeaway from the episode with Amira was something that we discussed in the episode. We also discussed it in the live, but it was also a comment that she made on a post on Instagram. And it really just stood out to me. And I feel like so often these days, especially when it comes to new grads that are looking for advice, they're looking for what they should do, what they shouldn't do. And of course, they look to practitioners that have been out in the field, that are in these practice areas. And a lot of times there are certain practice areas that more often than not are not recommended for new grads. And while I think there is truth to some of the reasoning behind this, I also think that just because somebody says you shouldn't do it doesn't mean that you can't do it. And early intervention is one of those practice areas that pops up time and time again. And very, very often, most people recommend not jumping into early intervention as a new grad. And while I agree, working in early intervention is not for everybody, it is the perfect placement and practice area for some. So I'm not saying that everybody can go as a new grad and jump into early intervention, but what I am saying is that if you have a passion for it and you've had experience or exposure and you kind of know what you're getting yourself into and it's where your heart is, just because somebody says that you shouldn't do it doesn't mean that you can't. And honestly, I feel like if you're interested in, say, working in early intervention as a new grad or any other practice area that typically people say don't do as a new grad, if you're interested and you have a passion, and again, you know what you're getting yourself into, do it. Give it a shot. Now, that doesn't mean that it's going to be easy. That doesn't mean that you're not going to have to put in countless hours and research and do a lot of other stuff to make that transition easier as a new grad. But if it's something that you just can't shake, that you just can't get out of your head, and it's something that you really want to try, and also if you get a job opportunity fresh out of school, if you have an idea of what you're getting yourself into and it's something that you want to do, then I say go for it. I would also recommend that you do try to get experience and get exposure in that practice area as a student, as a volunteer, whatever you can do to bring that awareness so you actually know what that practice area looks like. And I know times are a little bit tricky right now because of COVID, and lots of places aren't accepting students in person, or they're not accepting volunteers. So if you can't get a placement, if you can't get a fieldwork rotation in that practice area that you want, and you can't even get any volunteer hours there, that means you're just going to have to dig in and do your research. You are going to have to be talking to people that are working in that practice area, listening to podcasts, reading blogs, reading books, reading articles, reading evidence-based practice research around it, and really try to gain as much perspective as you possibly can about that practice area if you are completely unable to even see it in person for yourself these days. One thing that Amira mentioned in the episode that really, really stuck with me was her path and her path into early intervention. And she mentioned how she's always had a passion for working with young children and babies, and that originally she thought that she was going to be working in the NICU, and that's where her heart was. She was actually able to get a placement as a student in. And then throughout her time working in the NICU, she kept hearing about early intervention, and then that kind of piqued her interest to get into that practice area. And I think it's so important that she has the working knowledge of what it looks like to work in the NICU, and now is working in early intervention, and how she can bridge that gap from the kiddos that are getting discharged from the NICU and getting referred into early intervention, and how she best, as an OT practitioner, can bridge that gap and help the clients and help the parents and the caregivers through that transition going from one area to another. And I actually had just the opposite, or I should say the other end of the practice area when I was first starting out as a new grad. So I got hired to be a part of a very, very small private pediatric clinic. And that clinic contracted with schools. It also did clinic-based therapy and early intervention home-based therapy. So fresh out of school for my first four-ish years, I was getting pediatric experience across the board. I was working with kids as young as 4 to 6 months, and my oldest kid during that time period was, I believe, 21 years or something like that. So I got a wide range of pediatric experience, and I am so thankful for that experience because it really opened my eyes to lots of different practice areas, even within the realm of pediatrics. So not only did I learn the ropes at schools and how IEPs work and how to deliver services at a school, and also kind of all of that collaboration between the parents and the teachers and the school administrators and anybody else that's affiliated on that team, but then I also gathered a ton of experience working in the clinic and working in a private clinic and what types of kids come through there, how to deal with insurance. I mean, you name it. I got the full gamut of outpatient pediatrics outside of, say, working in like a children's hospital or something like that. And one of the biggest things that has been super important and super pivotal to working in early intervention is understanding the transition between the IFSP, which is the Individualized Family Service Plan, which happens as part of the early intervention program, and the IEP, which is the Individualized Education Program, which happens as part as the school, the educational plan. And understanding that transition, understanding what happens, understanding the differences between services provided in early intervention and services provided at a school district, understanding that entire process has been immensely helpful. So when my kiddos that I'm working with in early intervention start to get close to their third birthday, usually around like the 2.5 year mark, something like that, is where the transition meeting pops up. And it's something that we start talking about with our clients. And being that I have that experience with the transition, but also understanding what services would look like in the schools, I have found that to be so important to share and educate the parents and families about this process so they understand and they are fully prepared going into the whole new world of school-based therapy and IEPs and everything that kind of comes along with that. So one thing that I would say is if you really want to work in early intervention and you potentially can't find a job opportunity or a placement, gather experience in surrounding practice areas, like the NICU, like what Amira did, or like school-based therapy, like clinic-based therapy, working in a children's hospital. You will learn things in those practice areas and be able to apply them to working in early intervention. And also, this isn't just early intervention. This could go for any other practice area. If you want to be able to, say, work in acute rehab, but you can't find a placement or you can't find a job in it, consider other areas that would give you experience that would be transferable to that practice area. So you can start looking at a skilled nursing facility, or you could look at outpatient adult services or anything like that. So I think, again, and I made a post about this on my social media a few weeks ago, but really it's about kind of thinking around the edges, learning around the edges, and listening around the edges. So lots of what you can learn, even if it's not the specific practice area that you want to get into, you can learn so much from other practice areas and be able to apply that to that practice area once you are able to get into it. Especially if you are, say, considering getting into early intervention and think that maybe you need to get a little bit more experience before jumping into that practice area, well, you can research and you can get into surrounding areas, and I promise you, you will learn things that you will be able to apply to that specific practice area. So, bottom line, if you want to work in a specific practice area and you hear that you shouldn't do it as a new grad, don't let that deter you. Do your research, figure it out for yourself. If you think that you can make it work, don't be afraid to test it out. It might not work, and it might not be great for you, but it also might be the perfect place, just like what happened with Amira. And also, if you can't get into the area that you want to, find another area that is similar or related to it that will also give you experience and information that you'll be able to apply to the practice area that you really want to get into. My next takeaway has to do with the conversation that Amira and I had about using what our clients have. I think so often today, there are a million and one different therapeutic activities, materials, devices, you name it. And honestly, a lot of them can be quite expensive, especially when we are potentially recommending more than one device or lots of different devices or anything like that. And Amira and I in the episode had a quite lengthy discussion about going bagless and utilizing what our clients have and making it where we are paying attention to their financial status. We are trying to understand exactly where they are. So when we recommend something, or when we bring in a toy, or when we bring in some sort of material or device, we know that the family will be able to have access to it and be able to use it, because it does not make any sense to recommend something that your client will not be able to afford. And if anything, it will just make them feel bad that they can't afford it and they can't access it. And it really could have a huge detriment to the therapy process, where you come in and recommend something and they're just like, well, I can't do that. And you're like, well, you have to, this is what you need to do. And then the families can't do it, or the clients can't do it. So I really think that having an understanding of your client's financial status is super important as an occupational therapy practitioner. And that doesn't mean that you can't come in and show maybe one of the top of the line or one of the more expensive devices or materials. But what you also need to have in mind is, if they can't afford it or don't want to afford it, then to have some other low-cost options ready to discuss with them. Because the other thing too is, if they haven't tried it yet and we don't know if it works, then if you recommend something that's super expensive, they go out and buy it, and then it doesn't actually add benefit to them. What's the good in that as well? So sometimes starting with the low cost options can be a really good alternative, because they can test it out. And if it works, and then if they want to go spend the money on something that is more expensive, they already know that it works. They are already invested in it. And then they can go make that own decision. But we don't want to limit accessibility based on financial reasons. And I've had this happen many, 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 many times. But one of the experiences that really stands out to me was when I was doing some volunteer work in Peru. And I had this boy come in, and he was roughly 10, 11 years, something like that. And his mom really wanted him to work on his cutting skills. And one of the sides of his body had been affected, which made doing any sort of bilateral task quite difficult because he preferred to use the good side, and the not so good side was typically not even really kind of considered or thought of during when he was trying to do these activities. So he came in, and after a quick little kind of screen and assessment, I had the perfect idea. So we sat down at this table and I educated the boy about using the affected side as a stabilizer and then utilizing the good side to be able to cut. And I think we were using some homemade Play-Doh that we had made, and we turned that into a pretend pizza, and we were cutting slices and all that kind of stuff. And the kid was loving it. And as soon as I educated him on how to incorporate his affected side into this task, he took it and ran with it and absolutely loved what was going on. And actually was thriving in the activity too. I mean, it took just a couple minutes and then all of a sudden he was cutting up a storm, utilizing both hands. He had really good body position as he was sitting there, like everything was great. But there was one problem. While I thought using homemade Play-Doh was a great way to allow the families to be able to make it themselves, and it was, that actually wasn't even the issue. The issue arised with the table. At one point, the mom looked at one of the local therapists that I had been working with, and they started talking in Spanish, and I could tell that something was up. And then all of a sudden, the therapist looked at me and said, "This is amazing. The mom is so excited about what's going on. The problem is they don't have a table at home." And at that moment, this whole thing just really resonated with me, that we have to understand what our clients have, what they have access to, what they can and can't afford before we can even make recommendations. And something as simple as a table might not even be something that they have access to. So fortunately, in this experience and for this family, the clinic that I volunteer with in Peru, they stepped up and they donated a table to the family so that this kiddo could continue the therapy and continue to work on these skills at home. But again, it is super important to understand where your clients are coming from and what they have access to and what they don't have access to before even making any sort of recommendation. And that story just really, really highlighted that fact and highlighted that point for me. And my last takeaway from the episode with Amira has to do, and I feel like a broken record, I feel like I say this all the time, but I'm going to say it now, I'm going to say it again in the future. The importance of finding a mentor or finding mentors, you don't even just have to have one, but having a mentor, especially as a new grad within your first couple years out of school. And honestly, I've been practicing for 11 years now, and I still have mentors that help me in different aspects and different areas of my clinical practice, as well as operating a business and all sorts of different things. So having a mentor is not just for new grads, it's for anybody that really wants to continue to develop, to continue to progress, and really become the best practitioner that they possibly can be. And this is something that I tell every single student that gets placed with my company and every single new grad that I come across, even volunteers when they come through. I stress the importance of having a mentor. And one of the things that I also talk about a lot too is trying, and I know it's not feasible in every single job or practice area or anything like that. But one of the things that I stress so much is when you are a new grad and you are applying to your first job or your second job or third job, wherever you are, that considering mentorship as a part of your benefit package. A lot of times people can be kind of consumed with the financial aspects, how much they're making, do they have a 401k contribution, what about medical benefits, what about PTO, paid time off, what about professional development, all this kind of stuff. And while all of that is super important, and I'm not discrediting that at all, one of the other things that you also have to consider is mentorship. And is mentorship a part of your job package, a part of your benefit package? And what I mean by that is sometimes that mentorship is freely offered as part of the package, and it's amazing, and you get paired up with a mentor, and everything's great. But sometimes the mentorship part of that package can fall short. And for me specifically, I know when I first started applying to jobs, I had two offers. I had one that was slightly more money, but my mentor was actually in a completely different state, a completely different time zone. And it would be somebody that, yes, I could call when I needed, but was not on site with me, or at least in the same city and in the same location as me. And then I had another offer that was slightly less money, but the mentorship was there. The mentorship was going to be there every single day. I was going to have my boss with me all the time, as much as I needed. I could pull her into sessions with me. I could pick her brain in between sessions. And there was also more of a team around me. So for me, when I was considering these two jobs, the really defining factor for me was the mentorship piece and knowing that I was going to have mentorship with me whenever I needed and physically there. I think that is important. While it doesn't necessarily have to be like physically in person, especially with COVID these days, but having access whenever I needed it, that sealed the deal. And I actually took the job that was a little bit less money because I knew how important that mentorship piece was going to be. And something that I also say a lot to my students and volunteers is that if you can get a solid grasp on what it is that you are doing in that practice area and get that solid foundation in that practice area within your first couple years out of school, you're going to be able to take that and run with it. And having that mentorship is a huge piece of that. But if you don't get the mentorship and you don't build that solid foundation from the beginning, you're going to struggle and you're going to continue to struggle for years and years and years. And you're probably just going to always feel like you are treading water and not really knowing what you're doing and not having a firm understanding of what you should be doing and how you should be doing it. So that being said, really take a look at the mentorship piece. Now, I'm also not saying to be lowballed into getting mentorship and having a really, really poor salary or payment rate, right? I'm not saying that, but I'm saying consider it as a part of the package when you are applying to jobs. Now, some organizations are going to have mentorship as a part of it, and some won't. And if you find a position that you really want to get into and mentorship is not something that they offer, that's okay. Because what that means is you are just going to have to take initiative to do it yourself and either reach out to somebody in the community, maybe on social media, maybe reach out to somebody at your school of where you graduated from and see if they can put you in contact with somebody who could be a mentor for you. So it is an important piece of the package, whether or not your company offers it, or if you have to seek it out on your own. So there you have it. My three takeaways from the episode that I did with Amira about early intervention. Number one, if you're interested in a practice area, try your best to get experience in it before. But if somebody says you shouldn't do it because you're a new grad, just because they said you shouldn't do it doesn't mean you can't do it. Number two, be considerate of your client's financial status and consider using materials that they already have or relatively low cost options. And I promise you'll have better carryover and you'll be able to build a stronger connection with your clients by allowing them to have access to whatever it is that you are recommending that they use. And then number three, and I can't stress this one enough, find a mentor. Find mentors. Get that support that you need, whether if it's in your organization that you work for or outside of that. But having a mentor, especially as a new grad, especially within your first couple years of practice, is so important. And your future self will thank you for finding a great mentor right from the beginning. So if you haven't listened to the episode with Amira yet, go check it out. It's episode 79, titled Working in Early Intervention as a New Grad. If you are looking for even more information about early intervention, because I know it's one of those practice areas that is still kind of misunderstood, a lot of people don't have experience or exposure to it, I have a couple other episodes that you can check out as well. You can check out episode 51, and that is titled Early Intervention with an OT Mom, and that is with Danielle DiLorenzo from Mornings with an OT Mom. And in that episode, we dive into what early intervention looks like from the therapist, but also from the parent perspective, as she has a son that has recently gone through the early intervention process. And there's another episode too, if you're interested more about the importance of collaboration and interprofessional collaboration. Episode 17, I did with Jennifer Ogawa, who was a physical therapist, and her and I actually worked together. And so we did this episode about how OT and PTs collaborate in early intervention, and a lot about what it looks like and how we go about working together as a team in this practice area. So that's episode 17. And then I'll do a little plug for an episode that's coming up, and I will actually be interviewing a parent. So not a practitioner, but a parent of a son with a rare genetic disease. And I chat with her about her experience going through early intervention and what it was like from her perspective. So stay tuned for that episode. It will be coming out really soon. And if you have any thoughts or comments about this episode or the episode that I did with Amira, feel free to chime in over at otforlife.com/community. And also, don't forget, I've got the question of the month going on this month, and I need your voicemails. So if you want to have your voice on an upcoming episode of the OT for Life podcast, head on over to otforlife.com/question of the month. You can find out what the current question is right now, and then you can leave me a voicemail with your response to the question of the month, and then I can share that in an upcoming episode. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I hope you enjoyed this episode, as well as the full interview that I did with Amira. Like I said, I could talk about EI all the time and all day, but I really do think there was so much about the episode that Amira and I did that pertains to practice areas across the board. So I hope you got value out of this, and have a great day. Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you like what you hear, here are three easy ways you can help support the show. One, head over to otforlife.com to find out more about any resources discussed on the show. Remember, that's OT4LYFE.com. Two, share the podcast with a friend, colleague, or anyone interested in occupational therapy. Three, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast player so you don't miss out on any upcoming episodes. And while you're there, be sure to leave a review saying how much you love the show. Thanks again. I'll catch you next time, OT for Lifers.